The Texans are upset in an abysmal Thursday night football game against the Jets. The Lions are taking on the Packers in an NFC North showdown. And we do our Week 9 game picks. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome to the Fumble Rooski Podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Adam Wright with CJ Medeiros. We have a great show planned for you guys today. So we are covering Week 9, all things Week 9, which just began yesterday. And what was an embarrassing game for the Texans and for all Jets fans watching, it was about time that we saw what this Jets team could actually be. So not only did Aaron Rodgers throw for 3 touchdowns, and Garrett Wilson caught himself a touchdown pass. Devontae Adams caught one as well. This is exactly what they were looking for on the offensive side of the ball. Not only that, they managed to sack on defense CJ Stroud on 8 separate times and held him to a sub 50% completion percentage. If you're a Jets fan, you're like, where the hell has this been all season long? This has been an abysmal year for the Jets, and this is a little flash of what they could have potentially been this season. If we saw the Jets, this Jets team, all season long, then they're not 3-6. They're probably 6-3, or at least somewhere close to that. But we're going to put a little bit more of an emphasis here on the Texans, because good God, was this a bad showing. I don't want to put too much blame on CJ Stroud because he was sacked 8 times. And this offensive line, which is, as far as personnel goes, a top 5 unit, in my opinion, you have Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard. You can't get much better than that on bookends. You have Shaq Mason. And then we're going to get to another guy. This guy drafted out of the first round in 2022, Kenyon Green. He is now out for the year with a shoulder injury as of last night. But you talk about a guard. If you can, I completely disagree with taking guards in the first round entirely.
Yes, yeah,
it is a position that grows on trees. As a Patriots fan, I was slamming my New England Patriots over taking Cole Strange in the first round of that exact same draft. We are so lucky that Cole Strange was not as bad as this guy was. But Kenyon Green has been one of the worst guards in the league since he joined. And their offensive line in years past, since he's been drafted, has not been successful because of him. It's been successful in spite of him. Their interior line has not been very good this year. And this whole line as a unit has completely underperformed. So as I said, this is a top five as far as personnel goes. This is a top five unit. As far as analytics go, they are actually bottom five, which is insane because this line should not be as bad as it has been this season. And that's the major point of emphasis here. This offensive line allowed CJ Stroud to be sacked 8 times. And of course, your completion percentage is going to be that low. 11 for 30. You pass the ball 30 times. If you're passing it only a few times and you pass under 50%, okay, fine. It's a small sample size. 30 times. That means this guy was under pressure the entire game. And I'm starting to get a little worried about this team. We already talked about on our Tuesday episode how the Texans, they lost Stephon Diggs for the year, ACL tear, probably for forever because he's a free agent after this season. You also lost Nico Collins for God knows how long. IR, he's supposed to be back after week 10, but that's if he's ready. We don't know if he's ready yet. Excuse me. So you're relying on an old producing, but old Joe Mixon. You're relying on Tank Dell, who's a sophomore, has has yet to prove that he's definitively a one. He had a nice game to last night, 6 receptions, 126 yards. But this is all we've seen from Tank Dell all year. He has been on the back burner all season long, which is a red flag. If you're a number one wide receiver, you at least show out a little bit, even in a crowding pass-catching core. Your other guy was Dalton Schultz. Fine. He's okay. As far as tight ends go, three catches, 21 yards, a bit of a dud. So I'm a little worried at this point. I wasn't that worried last time. If you guys were watching the episode or listening to it, other co-hosts on the show, there were 4 of us. Others were more worried than I was. I'm starting to get a little more worried now. Mm-hmm. Because now, you know, 6-3 isn't the end of the world. It's not terrible. But it wasn't the end of the world for the Jaguars last year until it was. They were 8-3, and it's like, okay, they're going to make the playoffs, a couple ugly losses. They'll be in the postseason. Until they weren't, and they finished 9-8. It never is a problem until it is. And this offensive line has been bad. As far as personnel goes, I will die on this hill that they should be better than they are. It's the same thing, same way with the Bengals. I feel the same way the past few years. They have been bad, but they should be better. And this Texans team, they have a lot of things to work on if they're going to remain in contention and stay a Super Bowl contender. Because if this continues, fourth year in a row, a very different AFC South champion.
Yeah, pretty much. And I want to add on to that by saying this. Yeah, I know the Texans are hurt, and injuries are really the one opponent that you just can never beat. Yeah, you know, losing your wide receiver 2 for the entire year, losing your wide receiver 1 for a minimum 4 weeks. And by the way, we have received no positive confirmation that he's going to be done after the 4-week window, or at least done healing. So that's something to keep an eye on. And you just lost a left guard. And usually injuries, we don't know why, I'd assume some kind of psychological effect. The injuries tend to snowball for a lot of teams, especially if like big guys go down. But, and look, and you can only blame injuries so much. And yeah, I know CJ Stroud got sacked 8 times. They're just, even when they were winning and they were healthy, they just weren't passing the eye test. I know it's like, oh, the eye test doesn't matter. I like stats, some say. And I get that. I do. But just they just didn't really have that wow factor that they did. And you look at how they've been winning, and it's weird. A 2-point victory over the Colts, a 6-point victory over the Bears. You got spanked 34-7 by the Texans. A 4-point victory over the Jaguars, a 3-point victory over the Bills, a 20-point victory over the lowly rebuilding Patriots. You lost to the Packers by 2, and then you beat the Colts by 3. Do the math, kids. There was, oh, by the way, and you just lost to the Jets, but we already knew that. If my math is right, there's only one game this entire year that the Texans won by more than one score. That is bad, even before injuries that reeks of fraudulence. And now let's take a look at those injuries and compare that to, you know, like the rest of their schedule. So yeah, you know, you're missing your first 2 receivers. That sucks. You know, your line's falling apart. That's not ideal. But have you seen the rest of their schedule? Next, you are hosting Detroit. Then you're traveling to Dallas. Then you're hosting the Titans, fair. Then you're going to Jacksonville. That might be a little tricky, but whatever. Then you're hosting Miami. Shouldn't be too bad. But then you're at Kansas City and you're hosting Baltimore. Then you end in Tennessee. So on the rest of their schedule, you have 1, 2, 3 more divisional matchups. And you have to play the Chiefs, the Lions, and the Texans. That whole thing about Jacksonville starting out hot and ending 9-8, that is a terrible reality that is staring, you know, that scenario, like I said, with Jacksonville, is now staring the Houston Texans directly in the face. I don't care if C.J. Stroud's better than Trevor Lawrence. I don't care that D'Amico Ryans is a better coach than Doug Peterson. This scenario happening to you is more real than even I would care to admit. Because, you know, I think the Texans are cool, but I just, like I said, it when you, and I know about the injuries. It sucks, but come on, next man up, right? I thought you guys were deep. I did. Apparently not. And then there's the Jets. Not a whole lot to say about them. I mean, you know, Rodgers did get bailed out by some of the talent around him, because if you just looked at how he played, he wasn't great. A lot of dink and dunk passes. He didn't look in control. He, like I said, it's becoming obvious that his receivers have become kind of a crutch for him, and rightfully so. Davante Adams finally showed out in a Jets uniform. Garrett Wilson had himself a game, including a kind of controversial one-hand catch, but I don't care. The catch was cool regardless. So, yeah, you know, if you're the Jets, you needed this, right? This was the get-right game. And I dare say, hey, you know, you got it. I wouldn't say these are two teams on opposite trajectories, because the Jets, I view this as more of a flash in the pan, because the rest of their games, most are winnable. But we'll see, because next you have to go to the Cardinals, which you should win. But the Cardinals are they're a plucky team. You know, they're not great, but they can cause problems. Then there's the Colts. You're hosting the Colts. Hey, I think it's weird that Joe Flacco gives the Colts better chances to win than Anthony Richardson. Man, what the hell? The Jets, then you have to host the Seahawks. That could cause problems. Going to Miami, the heat in Miami always does teams in, especially with Miami's unfair advantage with how their stadium's built. Then you go to Jacksonville. It shouldn't be too terrible. Then you host the Rams. That's a problem. Then you go to Buffalo. That's a problem. Then you host Miami, which, you know, Miami, they're interesting. So, yeah, it's doable to turn it around, but there's some big potholes on their road to the playoffs.
Yeah, it's more so about how they look than the opponents that they face. Because if you look at the past few opponents that they've gone up against in the past few weeks before this game, you would think, without seeing the final scores, Steelers, Patriots, Texans, you'd think this would be the game that they'd lose to, the Thursday night football game here. But they lost to the Patriots and they lost to the Steelers. So what this tells you is that this Jets team, if they have their head screwed on straight, if they play how they're supposed to be with the talent that they have, then they should be able to beat most teams in the league. That's just logic. But They just haven't looked that way. And that's really what it all comes down to here, is kind of sort of that issue. Their biggest opponent is themselves, I would say. Organization is, it's just garbage. It's a garbage organization. Even when they have the talent in front of them, they can't use it correctly, which is really sad to see. But one less aspect about this game. I mentioned earlier when I was introducing the segment that Garrett Wilson caught two touchdown passes. One of those touchdowns, aside from it being one of the best catches I have ever seen, probably the best catch I've seen since Odell Beckham Jr.'s one-handed grab in 2014 for the New York Giants. This one was insane, and it was kind of in a similar manner. He was in the back of the end zone here, and that's where the issue came, because last week, George Pickens caught a touchdown that ended up not being one because he got 2 feet down, but it was the same foot twice, which according to the rules is not the way it goes. You're supposed to get both feet down, not your right foot twice or your left foot twice. Garrett Wilson, in hindsight, it looked like it was the same thing. Except when you saw the replays, he got that last foot also got a shin down. One shin is all that's required. You don't need 2 feet. You don't need two shins. If you have one shin, then that's it. So there's where the controversy kind of comes, is that a lot of people are comparing this Garrett Wilson touchdown reception to George Pickens last week, and they're saying, well, what was different this time? That's what I saw. That's my interpretation of it. Most of NFL's fandom, and it seems like the league too, just doesn't understand what a catch is. And CJ, I think we were talking about this a little bit off air. I think you have the best kind of depiction of this, is that nobody really understands what a catch is, and it's exactly. So vague.
Yeah, it is. It is. And here's the thing, right? The year is 2024, and it's embarrassing that a professional sports league, it's been around as long as the NFL has, quite literally doesn't know what a catch is. It varies. It seems like it varies year to year. Like, there's just so much controversy around, did it survive the ground? Did it not? Is his hand under it? Did he get 2 feet down? Oh, did he just get 1 foot down? Was his knee down? Does getting your butt down count? Which was like a thing that happened once. Sure, did he get both feet down, but did he only drag 1 foot? Did it, like, what? Literally, if you grab it and the ball doesn't fall, then, like, how is it not a catch? It does, you know, I'm not here to argue whether or not Wilson made the catch. I don't really care. It seems like I can't see a reality where one is a catch and one is not, even if you flip-flopped it. I don't really like the Steelers all that much, but come on. Seems like either both should be or neither are. Like I said, it's just – and if you go to the rule book and you read, like, what a catch is, I don't have the definition in front of me, but I encourage you to read it for yourself. It's vague. It's really vague. And honestly, we all know why. Like, there's a belief that, you know, the league keeps it vague so that they can tweak games as they see fit, which it seems far-fetched, but I wouldn't be shocked if it was happening. But as every year I've been on this podcast, I have said at least once, and guess what, kids? It's time again this season. The league actually needs to create a concerted effort to actually, like, define what a catch is, because we quite literally do not know, and it is genuinely shameful. And if you want to quell the conspiracy theories and you actually want to restore some sheen of integrity, then I don't know, either change the definition or, like, make the definition clearer, because this happens. Like, every year there's, like, a handful of catches that are just so controversial. You cannot have that. And the longer you leave it, I just want to say, the longer you leave it going like this, you only hurt yourself.
Yeah, and I don't know if they ever will fix it, because there's so many different moving parts that it's – how do you even fix it at this? What is a catch? What is a catch? Because on one end, like, you can talk about how a foot – so, like, if one toe – could be a foot, but if a toe goes down and then the heel goes down, then it's not a catch. Like, the heel goes down out of bounds, then it's not a catch. But then how do you toe drag? Like, exactly. What about toe dragging out of bounds? The whole toe drag swag issue. Or how about when you're coming to the ground right after catching it, and then the ball comes out? You're on the ground and you're down, but it's ruled an incomplete pass because you didn't make a football move. I like to characterize it as establishing yourself as a runner. I think that's a little bit better of an explanation.
I get it, but then it's like, what if you go up for it, high point it, then go down? Like, I don't know. And by the way, the thing with the football move, and I'm glad you brought that up, no one knows what a football move is.
That's why I say establish yourself as a runner. That's something I know what it is.
Yeah, because, like, and see, here's the thing. Right, this happened. There was a Thanksgiving game, was Patriots-Vikings. Most people agree that Hunter Henry caught a touchdown, and then he just decides not to, and then the refs said no because he didn't make a football move, even though he caught the ball, pivoted, and dove. I remember, Adam, I was in your fantasy football league, and I was going back and forth with this one kid. And the reason that this is such a problem is because this one kid, I remember his name, he might have been on the show before. He literally said he didn't make a football move. I said, this kid, okay, you play football. What's a football move? He's like, I don't know. And that's the damning thing. No one knows. Like, so we don't know what a football move is. We don't know what a catch is. Then there's that whole, did he survive the ground, which is weird. And just, there are so many things that the league doesn't know. And like I said, you could debate George Pickens. You can debate Garrett Wilson. You could debate any of that. But my point stands on this. It is incumbent on the NFL to change this, to just make some kind of definition, because the longer this goes, people are going to like blatantly think the league is rigged, and a lot of people do. And sure, it might be a conspiracy theory, but NFL, you've brought it on yourself.
Yeah, and I hope it's something that gets ironed out, but I mean, it probably won't. And most catches are blatant catches, which is a good thing. So like, it only comes up every so often. And even sometimes it's just close and you can tell that they made the right call. I would go as far as to say most of the time they make the right move. As far as the catch rule goes, they make the right call, and it's very rarely a borderline, like where there's a lapse in the rules type of call. So at least it's not that bad, I would say. But there are some instances where it's just I don't know how they'll iron this out, but I mean, they may not even try. All right. Next, we have our Fumble Rooski game of the week for week 9. We have a showdown. Lions visiting the Packers at Lambeau Field. That's next. You're listening to the Fumble Rooski podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Adam Wright with CJ Medeiros. So, all right. We have a pretty good matchup for our game of the week, if I may say so myself. We have the Detroit Lions who are visiting the Green Bay Packers. And so the big part about this matchup here is that we're not quite sure if Jordan Love is playing. He's been limited for most of this week, so there's a very good chance that he is playing. So for the sake of argument, we're going to act as if he will play, because usually when your starting quarterback is at least limited in practice starting on Wednesday, then they'll end up going. So we'll act that Jordan Love and Josh Jacobs will be playing. And if that is the case, you have a matchup between two players. You have between two teams, Detroit Lions, who are 6-1. They've been destroying the league in the last month. 172 points scored just in the past 4 games. And the Green Bay Packers, who have been pretty good themselves, they are 6-2, and they've been doing pretty well themselves. 24 or more points scored in each of the last 7 games. They've been pretty good themselves. And I feel like we haven't gotten to talk about the Packers very much this year. A lot of it is because Jordan Love hasn't played very much. He missed a good portion of the start of the year, and Malik Willis was able to hold down the fort while he was coming back from injury. Now Jordan Love is back. The team has hardly missed a beat. And if he goes again, then we have ourselves a pretty good matchup. A matchup against two teams that can put points on the board and have also shown to play a little bit of defense as well. But CJ?
This game, you got to take standard wisdom and throw it out the window, because we say it before. This is a divisional game. And that's really where the crazy shit tends to happen, isn't it? Pardon my French. I'm sorry. The spirit of Chris took over there. But like I said, they lost to the Vikings. That was insane. But then they've won 4 straight. You beat the Packers. You wallop the Cardinals. You eke one out over the Texans. And maybe concerningly, you eke one out over the Jaguars. Now you're in Lambeau and you're hosting Detroit. So obviously you, I do not believe, has played Detroit yet, right? I don't think they have. No, they haven't. And here's something that might make this a little sweeter. This is for divisional supremacy. And because, like I said, so if the Packers win, they advance to 7-2. And if the Lions lose, then they go down to 6-2. Packers take the division lead. So this game has a lot going for both sides, but the Packers defense needs to tighten up. That is my big takeaway, because I have mentioned this a few times before, but now I think it bears repeating. This defense gave up 27 points to Jacksonville, gave up 22 to Houston. You gave up 13 to Arizona, but that's Arizona. And you surrendered 19 to the Rams, but an injured Rams. So mostly it's the last 2 weeks that have been concerning. I mean, sure, you're winning. And, I mean, your offense is doing great. But, oh, my God, your defense keeps getting ran over. And a lot of the reason is, and no one's going to want to hear me say it, but it's the truth. And if you don't like it, debate a wall, because I'm not interested in hearing anyone else's side. It's Jordan Love. And this is another thing that I've said. You did not get the next Aaron Rodgers. You got the next Brett Favre, where you have all the explosive plays, but oh my God, this kid throws a mean interception. And the Lions especially, when Adam mentioned that offensive tear they're on, the Lions are a team that will make you pay for it every time. They have far and away the best running back duo in the NFL in David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs. They have Amon-Ra. I mean, they have Laporta, who they haven't thrown to as much, but hey, he's still pretty dangerous. And a solid O-line, and the defense is now starting to come together. So I think this week is more important for the Packers than the Lions, because the Lions, we know what they are. But for Green Bay, you know, you lost Jordan Love for a bit. This is your first, I would say your first true test, but this is definitely your biggest test. You're going up against the division leader, and a loss just won't cut it. And their only way to win is you need to beat Detroit in the turnover battle.
Yeah. Overall, it's going to be who scores the most. I mean, defenses, that is
how football works, I take it.
No shit, but
I'm sorry.
Whatever. Overall, it's going to be on. You can't out defend the other, because I don't think either defense really has the firepower to really just clamp down on the other. The offenses are just too high flying, too good, and the defenses just aren't there. Like they have solid defenses, but it's very middling, and especially since the Lions lost Aiden Hutchinson, their ceiling for how great that defense could have been just went way down. They can still be a competent defense. They can still be a Super Bowl winning defense. But number one, we haven't quite seen that yet. And number two, the ceiling is lower. So your edge rushing is just not there. So who is going to force Jordan Love to make that mistake to throw the interception? Because, yeah, Jordan Love has thrown that he could throw a lot of turnovers during his last year and a half of being a full-time starter in the league, but you still need to be forced to make those turnovers. And as far as that goes, I just don't know if – I don't know if the Lions can produce that kind of pressure. They could, but – even if they do, I mean, Jordan Love, he may throw a lot of interceptions, but he also throws a lot of picks. Jesus Christ. I'm fighting a cold. A little exhausted.
Oh, really no problem, man. Don't worry.
Yeah. But he also throws a lot of touchdowns and a lot of yards. This is the Brett Favre style offense. This is the Brett Favre experience. Is that he lets it fly so much that it doesn't matter how many turnovers he commits, because the touchdowns that he produces, the yards that he throws for, it just is so overwhelmingly successful that the turnovers end up being an afterthought. So I look at this. I think this is going to be a very close game. This may end up being one of the best matchups of the year, as far as anticipation goes as well. Mm-hmm. I'll give it a slight edge to Detroit, but watch out for the Packers. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, this game is a toss-up. You know what I mean? This is a pure toss-up. However, I'm tilting towards Detroit. There's an election coming up, and so I would say Detroit, if this were an election, would probably win by just under a point. It's going to be close, make no mistake. And especially because it's in Green Bay's, that's just not. Oh my God, that's going to be tough. But I don't see a world where Green Bay loses the turnover battle and wins the game. So give me Detroit. It's going to be a fun one, though, God willing.
We'll call the Lions kind of the blue wall.
Yeah, because it's blue, funny, and Rust Belt.
Well, yeah, and they're both in Rust Belt states, so that's going to be interesting. But enough politics. More on the important stuff, which is the Lions and the Packers.
Amen.
I would also make the argument that Jordan Love is the better quarterback. I think Goff takes care of the ball better, but we also already know what his ceiling is. He's been in the league for years. We know that he can take a team to a Super Bowl. We know that he can take a team to the conference championship. We know he can do all that. But he hasn't shown the ability to win it in big moments. And I wouldn't go as far as to say that Jared Goff is elite. He's the type of quarterback who, yeah, he's a good quarterback, but he needs a lot of things around him in order to be really successful. Jordan Love, we still don't know entirely what his ceiling is. We know that he runs a very, very similar play style to Brett Favre, but how close to Brett Favre really is he? And we're still kind of figuring that out. So as far as right now, I would take Jordan Love just because of the uncertainty. We already know that he's a franchise quarterback, but how good can he really be? That I'm intrigued by. So in that sense, I'll probably take Jordan Love over Jared Goff. Nothing to take away from Jared Goff. He's a very, very good quarterback. I just wouldn't call him elite.
Not yet. I mean, unless he like wins a Super Bowl, I'd refrain from that. He's like a Matt Ryan kind of, if that makes sense. Like, because we're Matt Ryan, you know, he'll have like one. I think he's had like 2 years where I would truly consider him like top five, but we'll see.
Yeah, that's somewhere around there.
That's how I view Jared Goff.
Yeah. All right. Well, that settles it. We move on from our Thursday night football preview. We move on for the Rooski game of the week. We are headed to our official game picks for week 9. Don't go anywhere. This is the Fumble Rooski podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. Adam Wright with CJ Medeiros. We are on to our game picks for week 9, where we rapid fire, quick, bam, 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 through every single game, give a very brief explanation to why we pick each team, and we see how we do. I mean, we've had a pretty decent success rate lately as far as our game picks go. So we are going to start off.
So yeah.
What's that?
I said things are starting to stabilize, so that helps.
Yeah.
First, like 5 to 6 weeks are always kind of weird.
Because it's hard to tell who's good and who's not. Because, like, you can always have an idea who's going to be good going into the season, but you'll never know until the season really gets
midway,
going.
Like where we are now.
Yeah, so we're starting to figure that out. But we're going to start with the Patriots visiting the Titans. I'm taking the Titans. And if Will Levis was playing, then I would go otherwise. But the fact that Mason Rudolph, a career backup, is actually putting up significantly better numbers and the Titans actually look like a semi-functional offense just with him being there, I think that alone is going to be enough to beat the Patriots. It doesn't take much at this day and age to beat New England. So give me the Titans.
Yeah, I don't. The thing is, the Titans defense has been, well, they're the spitting definition of the phrase much ado about nothing. Because, oh my God, that defense has aged poorly. The offense is falling apart. Has it been confirmed that Mason Rudolph is starting by any chance? Do you know? Or
Mason Rudolph, yes.
All right, so it's been confirmed. The thing is, I go back and forth because I think that New England does win if Drake May plays. And I'm operating on the assumption that he is. So I'm tilting towards New England. If it's Brissett, then I don't see them winning.
Yeah. All right. Dolphins at Bills. This is a pretty easy one for me. I'm going the Bills. Tua may be back, but you're traveling to Buffalo. Miami's a warm weather team. And Tua, he's still shaking off some rust. Even if he had it shaken off, he was not much to write home about. So give me Buffalo.
It's Buffalo, and it's not really hard. Pause. But, I mean, come on. Seriously. I mean, I know Tua's back. He's shaking off the rust and the rot in his brain. But I just, come on. I don't see them beating Buffalo. Buffalo's getting hot now. You know, it's in Buffalo. You know, like I said, just not Miami's year. On a side note, McDaniel is just an unserious coach. So give me Buffalo. Easy.
Yeah. Broncos at Ravens. I am taking the Ravens. And I don't believe it's close for me. With the weapons that they have now added, the defense is very iffy, probably the most iffy the Ravens defense has been in the time that Lamar Jackson's been in the league. But I don't care. Bo Nix isn't beating Lamar Jackson.
For me, this is the quintessential definition of a trap game. I do not trust Baltimore's defense. I think Denver's a really good defense, but I just can't see Lamar Jackson and company losing twice in a row, and they're at home. So I got to go with the Ravens.
Yeah, Ravens are – their offense is on a scorched earth trial. They just continue to just destroy everybody. With the exception of Jameis Winston on that one week, which is insane.
Shout out Jameis Winston, the crab leg king himself.
I'd steal crab legs. I love crab legs. Yeah. Chargers at Browns. This is one where I was very iffy on. Could go either way. I will fully acknowledge that this is a game that is a toss-up, but I am going to go the Browns. I think the Browns, they have a little bit of momentum from last week. They have a new quarterback who is actually, I can't believe I'm calling Jameis Winston the competent quarterback between him and Deshaun Watson.
Come on.
In 2024, if you put me in a time machine and I told my past self in 2017 that Jameis Winston was going to be the better quarterback than Deshaun Watson on a new team, I'd have been like, there's no way. You're an imposter. But I think Cleveland has some momentum from last week. They have a quarterback who can actually throw the ball. Yeah. Give me the Browns.
Yeah. I have to go with the Chargers because we see this so many times where, you know, the backup quarterback comes in, he kicks ass in one game, and then it's back to earth the second week. I expect this is more of the same. I am not 100% confident because I do think there's going to be a rally around the flag effect for old famous Jameis now that Groper Cleveland himself is no longer playing. But that being said, I just like the Chargers in many more facets.
I like the Chargers a lot too. And I think there's a lot of good things. There's a lot of things to like about them. I think coaching gives a little bit of a culture change over there in LA. Justin Herbert's really good. They have Herbert has more time to throw the ball. And wide receiving core hasn't been that bad.
Now, and I really like this year for Justin Herbert. He's really proving that what has happened before is not his fault. You can't even hate on him anymore.
Nope. All right. Saints, Panthers. Saints are visiting Carolina.
Oh, Lord.
Talk about one.
God.
This is going to be a dumpster fire, but something tells me trap game for the Saints, which it's like the Saints have been, the Panthers have been bad, but I don't think we've paid enough attention to the Saints who have been bad too. And because of that, I just think everyone's going to let their guard down on Carolina, even the other bad teams like the Saints. So I'm going to roll with a little upset here. Give me the Panthers.
All right. I got to go with the Saints. I respect your opinion. Honestly, I think your reasoning's solid. I don't trust Bryce Young. I don't. Maybe I'm giving up on him too fast, but that's just me.
Yeah. Who knows if – I mean, I think it's very, very unlikely that this kid is a franchise quarterback at this point. Year two. Just something feels way off. And Bama quarterbacks usually don't work out anyways.
That is something that I've noticed, yes.
All right. Raiders, Bengals. Raiders are visiting Cincinnati. And a quick note, Orlando Brown and T. Higgins, both doubtful versus the Raiders. But I don't care. I'm still going the Bengals.
Mm-hmm.
They need to win this game. It's going to be about as ugly as it gets. But the Burrow to Chase combo is going to be good enough for them to win, even if Burrow is going to have Max Crosby in his face every other play.
The thing with Cincy, as far as I go, is that my pick – so I'm picking Cincy, but that's not a pro-Bengals thing. It's more of an anti-Raiders thing. It's more I'm picking against the Raiders. Because I think, you know, the Burrow-Chase connection is there. But what did the Raiders have? That locker room is as toxic as Chernobyl ever was. It's becoming blatantly obvious that their boy there, Antonio Pierce, is on borrowed time. The Raiders are just imploding. And if the way I see it, the Raiders are an old building that's about to get knocked down. If you're Cincy, you're just running in there and you're stealing the copper wire. AKA a win. That's all the Raiders are there for.
Yep. Commanders at Giants. I don't care if this is an away game for the Commanders. I'm taking them. This team is so much better than I thought they would be.
Oh, yeah.
Even in ugly games against the Bears, a team that has been pretty competent themselves, pleasantly, surprisingly as well. They've been pretty solid, and I think they're going to continue that against the Giants. Give me the Commies.
You know, I got to go with the Commanders as well. And you know it's bad for a football team like the Giants when your field is more dangerous than your team is. So that's easy. Give me the Commanders. You know they're on cloud nine after last week, and I expect them to keep the good feelings going.
Yeah. Cowboys, Falcons.
Oh,
I listen. This is, I'll go with, I'm going to take the Falcons on this one. And I think the Falcons, the Cowboys are just so bad, and they have so much firepower on offense, but they just can't use it. And their offensive line has been so bad. Yeah, give me the Falcons.
I don't want to do this, but I have to go with Dallas. I really do. Because, well, I have no confidence in the Falcons literally whatsoever to put, just to be consistent. That's really what it is to me. They are the most inconsistent team I've just ever had the misfortune of witnessing. I got to go at Dallas, because Dallas isn't great. But the thing is, their floor is higher than Atlanta's, because Atlanta 1 week looks like Super Bowl contenders, and then the next week they look like they're playing for the number one overall pick. I cannot make heads or tails of that team.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to change my pick to the Cowboys. They're inconsistent in the same way that the Cowboys are inconsistent. You take two teams that are inconsistent, you put them together, and you don't know what's going to happen. And I think the Cowboys can't stay this bad. So I think they win. They take this one. All right. We're going to step aside. We're moving on to our primetime and 4 p.m. slate. That's next. This is the Fumble Rooski podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski podcast. Adam Wright with CJ Medeiros. So we are on to our 4 p.m. slate and primetime games. So this is the 4 p.m. games and the Sunday night football games, Sunday night football game, as well as Monday night football, rather. So we're going to start with the Bears, who are visiting the Cardinals. I'm taking the Cardinals, because I think there's blood in the water. I think the Bears, they've played very good football to start the year. It's been up and down, but they had been getting better. And I think, how could you not get the yips from that last game where you just had it until you didn't at the last second? And I think that's going to knock them back a little bit. You have a rookie quarterback who's bound to have some sort of inconsistency. He's going to face some sort of turbulence. I mean, I'm very curious to see how he responds to it. So for that reason, I'm taking the Cardinals, and I think they take the home win. They go 5-4.
You know, I also have to go with the Cardinals at home. And I've mentioned this before. I said this off camera to someone I know. You just said it. How is that, what happened last week, going to impact the Bears? I can't imagine it's going to do it well. I mean, especially because I know their head coach and a lot of their defensive guys probably wanted to have Tyreek Stevenson, or whatever his name is there, drawn and quartered. But the best they could probably do is give him a verbal, just give him a verbal beatdown. But either way, with the Cardinals, are they getting it together? Because we finally saw Marvin Harrison Jr. actually playing pretty well, if I do say so myself. And the Cardinals' defense has flashes of being really good, but the Bears is one of those, it's just one of those teams, I've said it a few times, where if Caleb Williams was maybe a year or two further into his career, I would take the Bears in my sleep. But one, you're coming off that mental block. And two, the Cardinals are coming off a big game where they won thanks to their first rounder, Marvin Harrison Jr. I'm going with the Cardinals. And it is worth noting, at least as far as I go, that Ab and I picked the Cardinals, but we're not all in unison on this because Chris and Tuck both picked the Bears. So you never know.
Yeah, I was very close to picking the Bears, but is this Bears team good enough to be 5-3?
No.
And my answer is probably not. And I think they have a chance to make the playoffs or at least be competitive, but I never had that standard for a rookie quarterback. At least for most rookies, but yeah, I have to stick with the Cardinals there. All right. So next game is Jaguars visiting the Eagles. As iffy as the Eagles have been, after all of it, they're still 5-2. And they're facing a 2-6 Jaguars team and hosting them. So what if they figure everything out and they could end up winning this division. They're well within striking distance of doing so. I'm going to take the Eagles.
Yeah, I got to go with Philly because good Lord, Jacksonville is a dumpster fire. I mean, I think they have fight, but it's basically you have two head coaches that are going to pull out all the stops because they're both coaching for their jobs. I just think Philly's better equipped to win.
Yeah. All right. So we already covered Lions Packers, so we'll skip right over to the Rams at the Seahawks. And DK Metcalf, as of a few minutes ago, is officially listed as inactive. And the Rams have gotten a couple players back. The Rams are 3-4. And if they win this game, they're all of a sudden back in it in a really bad NFC West. They have a very strong chance of coming back and potentially winning this division. So give me the Rams.
Yeah, I got to go with the Rams. Now that they're healthy and the top dog in their division, a.k.a. the 49ers, is in free fall, the stars are lining perfectly. And guess what, Seattle? Love y'all, but no DK, no winning.
That's right. All right, here's our next one. We have the Colts who are visiting the Vikings. And I'll tell you what, the Vikings, they may be 5-2, but they were 5-0. They were undefeated. They've lost two in a row. In the game before that they won to improve to 5-0, they didn't look great. I mean, they barely got out of there alive in London against the Jets. They won by one score, 23-17. So you know what? With Joe Flacco being the new starting quarterback for the rest of the season for the Colts, suddenly that Colts team looks strongly in contention in their division and in a very strong spot to potentially make a playoff run. So give me the Colts.
I'm going with the Vikings because, well, I do think weird enough to say Flacco's appearance on the team does help them more than Richardson's does. I just, after seeing him play, just seems like the magic isn't there. There was last year, and the bleeding has to stop for the Vikings, right? Well, we'll see. I'm going with the Vikings.
All right. The Vikings could very well end up winning this game. I just think Sam Darnold is slowly but surely morphing back into his old self. And like we've seen this in the past. In fact, we've seen it with Sam Darnold specifically. A couple of years ago, he was on the Panthers. They started 3-0, and he was throwing touchdown passes left and right as well. But he slowly turned back into himself, and then the Panthers had a high pick in the draft. So listen, I'm just so skeptical of this Vikings team, and I think the Colts with Joe Flacco have been a very different football team. So for that reason, I think I'm taking the Colts on this one. All right. Now we have Monday Night Football. It is going to be the Buccaneers at the Chiefs. And boy, they're 7-0. And they don't look like they should be 7-0. In fact, there's starting slowly to be conversations. We're not having this conversation yet, but there's slowly conversations starting of, could they really go 17-0? Could they? I don't think they will. And we'll have this conversation in depth in a couple of weeks if they are still unbeaten. But I'm going to have to go with the Buccaneers here. I would say that I'm going to pick the Chiefs until they lose, but the Buccaneers are too much. They're too close to being a playoff team, and they seem a little bit more competent despite the record. As far as quality of play goes, by the way.
Oh, yeah, I gotcha. I have to go with Kansas City, not for the whole I'm going to pick with them until they lose. I would actually pick Tampa if they were healthy, but once again, wide receiver 1 and 2 are gone. Chiefs defense is good, and Baker's got at least one interception in them. I would have to go with Kansas City. But, oh, my God, they're just the most unconvincing undefeated team I've seen literally since the 2020 Steelers.
Yeah. It looks so bad, and you just feel like it's going to – the bottom's going to fall off at some point. But if they keep winning these games, then we're going to have the conversation about them potentially going 17-0, even though this is probably the worst we've ever seen Patrick Mahomes play in his entire career.
Probably, yeah. So
that's just something to look at. All right. That is all the scheduled content we have for today, but anything else?
No, I'm fine.
All right. Well, that'll do it for us tonight. Thank you for listening to us. We have new episodes out on Tuesdays at 7:30 PM Eastern Standard Time and Fridays at 5. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We also have all our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and so much more. Also, be sure to follow our Instagram at FumbleRooski_podcast and our TikTok at FumbleRooskiPod to keep up with our podcast and the latest coverage on the NFL. Otherwise, we'll see you next week. Over and out.